Hi, I'm Mary McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, my guest is pianist and composer Jason Moran. He's a young man of original thinking and high ideals, and he brings a totally fresh approach to the musical table. And I'm dying to hear some of that stuff.
Me too.
How did you get started? You're from Houston originally.
I'm from Houston,
right?
Texas. My parents put my brothers and I in piano lessons kind of as something to keep us busy during the summers. And so we just took piano lessons all for maybe 5 or 6 years straight. And I just was kind of, okay, this is kind of a chore rather than something I like to do. And I hated it. And I still say that. My parents hate that I say that I hated piano.
And you just say that to tease them.
I think maybe I do. But then, you know, and then I heard Thelonious Monk, and I was like, well, this is it. This, I have arrived. This is who I want to be.
That's what you heard first?
That's who I heard that made me want to play the piano. Like,
now, that's interesting. I mean, do you recall what you heard? Like, what?
It was around midnight. It was around midnight.
I was wondering about that because, to me, Monk is so, it's so amazing that he would write a tune like that and then he'd write like Hackensack or something that's kind of quirky.
Very, very. Well, the many sides.
The many,
many
sides of Monk.
I mean, I think that's almost like any great artist, that they have so many different facets of their composition or artistic style. So, yeah.
I suppose that's true. And, of course, you're going to do something by Ravel. We've never had somebody start out piano jazz playing Ravel. And I think that's wonderful because everybody, I think all jazz musicians love Ravel and those kind of impressionist composers.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to what you're going to do.
Yeah, this is kind of my take on Ravel. It's from Le Tombeau de Couperin, the third movement for Forlan, and then I composed a piece based on a small section of his piece.
But you do a little bit of Forlan in there.
Yes, I play that first, and then I go into my piece, which is called States of Art.
Oh, so yeah. Go ahead, I'm dying to hear that. Okay.
Thank you.
that's fascinating. What you just did you improvise on the reveal, or had you got it sort of arranged?
I have it sort of arranged. The second half of the piece is based on maybe four bars of his piece in the middle section. And then I just kind of compose a small melody to that, and I kind of keep that as the theme for my improvisation that follows.
It's terrific. I don't know what to say about it. I've never heard anybody take that particular piece. I used to have a friend that played that piece on the guitar, and I've always thought I would like to learn it, but I never have. Mm-hmm. I guess you first learned the reveal itself.
Right. Well, you know, usually when I would hear classical music, they sound, you know, for me, the best pieces almost sound like really well-planned improvisations. The way that they built up, the way that they had the percussion, you know, kind of add this drama to it, or how it peaked and how it died down after that. So like these long symphonies and pieces always sounded like just like great improvisations. And they started with one melody, and then, you know, it kind of mutated after that, and then it always kept going. So when I heard Ravel or, you know, Prokofiev or Shostakovich, I mean,
Debussy.
Yeah, they all had that element within it. And I was like, wow. So I would always not think of them as like classical music, which can't be touched, rather than, okay, I can deconstruct them just like they deconstructed themselves, you know.
It's sort of stretching to further out than most people improvising on just a blues or something. I think I would find that hard to take that Ravel piece and improvise on it.
Well, the thing
makes
is,
me want to try it though. Now
but
I hear
you
it.
Have, but like the things that you create, like spontaneously, are almost probably more complex than any of his pieces. You know what I mean? So if somebody transcribed a Mary McPartland solo and they put it in front of you, you'd be like, "Wow, this is amazing."
I don't want to see any of my stuff in front of me, boy. I don't want to see any of that stuff. Well, that really got me started. Was hearing that. That's beautiful. Now I would like to hear another something, maybe one of your songs. Or
right, this is actually a piece that I've learned from my teacher, Jackie Byard.
Oh, I loved Jackie Byard. He was such a great guy.
Yes, and I was fortunate to be under his wing for 4 years.
He was something else, so yeah. Undoubtedly you've learned a lot from him.
Yes. This is a piece entitled Out Front.
Oh, that Out should be Front. Great.
Thank you.
You're going to let it hang there.
Yes.
That's wonderful. With what? An F sharp?
Yes.
Oh, I love those those kind of endings. And, you know, I was sort of waiting for the F, and I thought, that's not going to come.
It's not going to come.
Well, that's so true of Jackie. I mean, that tune has so much humor in it, apart from, but I mean, technique now, you must have to practice quite a bit to play it.
I think Jackie secretly taught me stuff that I didn't know he was teaching me. There was exercises he used to give us, like... So after doing that over and over again, and then slowly as I started to perform professionally and stuff, things started to kind of sneak out that I didn't know that I knew.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Clever. Yeah, but I mean, that piece, it sort of made me think of him. It got faster and faster. It was like in the subway and the driver lost control of the train, and the train is rushing through stations, right. You know? And then all of a sudden it stops and comes back. I mean, that the actual melody of that is pretty much a blues sort of, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
But I love the way it just comes back to a sedate kind of ending and the way you let it hang there. I love that.
Appreciate it. Right, there you go. Now you hit it. It's resolved now. We can go home.
Had to do that. Well, there's more to come with Jason Moran. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. You had more than one teacher, though. We were studying with Andrew Hill, who I find him sort of, a little frightening with some of the things that he does. How did you, what did you get from him?
Oh, wow. This is a question I'm often asked and never can answer. He's actually with rhythm. This is approach to rhythm, which isn't as standard as most. There aren't strings of steady eighth notes or, you know, fa-va-da-va-da-va-da. He kind of truncates them and expands them, so it's very uneven. And also, when you speak to him, he has kind of a stuttered way of talking. And so his lines are often very indicative of the way he actually speaks, because they are broken. You know, they really move very precariously, and you can never really predict where he's going to go. So it's almost, when I've listened to his stuff so much and it's become a part of my playing so much, it's mostly his rhythm, but it's also his sensitivity and how his touch of the piano. I mean, Jackie also talked about that, is a piano should have a touch, you know. It should be just as singular as Coltrane's tone or Coleman Hawkins' tone on the saxophone. A pianist, when they sit at a piano, should have their own touch. You should be able to recognize it, you know what I mean?
Well, you certainly have a good knowledge of dynamics. I mean, some of it, you get very loud and vociferous, and then it goes down to a whisper. I mean, I love that. I love to hear dynamics rather than, you know, some people play at one level. That,
right, right.
And anyway, luckily you don't do that.
But dynamics are often, I've always thought, is almost more important than what you're actually playing. I mean, you can do a lot more. You can create a lot more drama with loud and soft and everything in between.
Oh, sure. And I mean, yeah. I guess drama is what it's all about to a certain extent. Because, and when you're playing for people, what do you think about playing for them, or what do you want them to get out of hearing you play?
Yeah, that's a question every night that changes. It's like whether or not I'm mad because the club owner is really being, you know.
I guess it does change because, but don't you get sort of a vibe from the people when you sit down? Do you know what's out there?
Right. Sometimes you may not even actually feel like playing until you actually sit down at your instrument and the band looks at you and you start to play. And
that's true.
Immediately after that, you're kind of in a totally different world. I mean, I've heard many musicians say it, and you know, maybe it sounds even corny, but actually for me, it's almost like you forget where you are. And then by the end of the piece, when you stop and people clap, you're almost reminded that you're in front of people. And they want to, you know, I want to give as much energy as I possibly can in every performance, because I want them to actually feel that. And, you know, if they see that and feel that, then they will respond to it. And so
yeah,
I've been fortunate.
I feel the same way about it. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of know, I think, if you've got that kind of an audience that's really with you and they're just digging everything that's happening.
Right, right.
Well, I could talk about this a lot, but, you know, I think we ought to maybe play a duet. I would love to do that.
Beautiful.
And what do you think we should do? What would be a good tune?
Let's try I Didn't Know What Time It Was.
I would love to hear you maybe do a chorus in front. Would you do like an ad-lib one?
Sure.
And then take the tempo and we'll just wing it, see where we go. Oh, I enjoyed that.
Me too. That was beautiful.
It's true what they say, what somebody said, that you have a, you know, a really different approach to things, because it's so nice, because it, with all you're doing there, you can still kind of catch the melody.
Know where everything
once
is.
In a while, sort of peeping through the clouds.
Right, right.
It's really nice. So, I don't know, I want to play a tune for you.
Beautiful.
And maybe I'll get a new take on it. Maybe you know this tune by Billy Strayhorn. I think it's by Billy and Duke Ellington. Mm. Daydream, you know? Mm. That tune?
No, I don't.
Well,
I'll learn it just
now's
right
your
now.
Chance to hear the wrong chords.
Thank you.
That was gorgeous. It's like the ending, like the whole modulation through all these three or four different keys. And
it's funny, I didn't know it was going to go there, but suddenly I thought, well, I might as well go to F.
Right. Those days.
I guess those thoughts go through your mind when you're playing something. Well, more in a minute. My guest is Jason Moran. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Well, you know, since Monk was your first influence, maybe we should do a monkish kind of a tune. What do you think?
That'd be great. But I guess you kind of knew Monk.
I did. I mean, as well as anyone could know him, I guess. I used to go to the Five Spot and hear him. But he came to hear me play once, and when I think how nervy I was, you know, I met him on the street, and I said, oh, I just learned one of your tunes around midnight, and when you're down in the area, we should stop by the club. I'd love to play it for you. You know, what arrogance. That's so awful. I thought I was hip. Anyway, he came one night with a friend of his, and it was a wet night, and they wore long black raincoats and berets, and the two of them looked very suspicious, and they went and sat in a booth in the back of the club, and we played with the trio, and they never stopped talking, never looked around, and I waited for some kind of reaction, you know, and there was none. So the end of the set, they got up and walked out and left me with the bill.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That should teach me a lesson.
Yeah, things don't change. Huh? They do that still.
I did meet him under some better circumstances, but that was one for the books because, you know, I fell right into that. So, well, let's do what, Bempshire Swing?
Bempshire Swing, that sounds good.
Okay. You started out and I'll fall in somewhere.
Okay. Thank you.
I love it when it just hangs there like that.
I haven't played two pianos for too many years. I mean, when Jackie and I used to study, we would have two pianos, but it's been that long since I've sat in two pianos and played with another pianist.
Well, obviously you've done it. I mean, we had, you must have heard of her, Dorothy Donegan?
Yes, yes.
When you went like that, you know, like showing all the up and down the keys, that, I mean, that's what she did. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely immobilized.
Immobilized.
I was. At the end of the show, I said, Dorothy, you win.
Right.
She said, oh, no contest.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was great. But she was, I mean, she was somebody I really admired for the way she played. Mm. I think I read somewhere that you like to take sort of, not old war horses, like take the A-Train, you want to take something that's obscure and work it up.
Yeah,
anyway, you've got this one that's so pretty, Single Petal of a Rose.
Single Petal of a Rose, yeah.
I recorded that, so I'm dying to hear what you're going to do with it.
I try to keep it intact. You know, I kind of like to maintain like the beauty of pieces without disturbing it, but to kind of put a different background.
Well, that's
it.
One way of saying it. I don't know. I guess I'm, you know, sort of, I'm imbued with the melodic things from years ago. Although I do like to get out, but I once in a while. But I'd love to hear what you do with that thing, because I just couldn't mess with it. But you go ahead and mess with it.
We'll see what I do.
But now, why do you want to do this? You want to make it more of something with your stamp on it?
It's almost like, for me, I look at that piece like a, because there really isn't an improvisational section in it. As like a classical piece. Like the same way I looked at the Ravel, there are certain elements of it that can be expanded upon. You know, that section. I choose, you know, just certain sections to kind of expand upon, and with keeping, you know, what I think the original intent of the melody is.
Well, so in the classical sense, what you're doing is like the cadenza that Liszt would play or Grieg would play.
Right,
that's what
right.
It is, just by another name.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I guess I could kind of sing Single Petal of a daisy. No.
That's what it'll wind up being, or the Single Petal of a Dandelion.
Right.
Well, whatever. It's going to be nice. I know that. It's going to be pretty.
Thank you.
I really loved what you did with that piece.
Oh, thank you.
And while you were doing it, I was thinking to myself, I just wonder what Duke would think of somebody like rearranging his stuff. Did you ever think about that, what he would think about it?
I think usually I always thought that like the artisans or the high priests of art always, were able to chop apart somebody else's, like he did the Peer Gynt suites. And so he's taken, the Nutcracker suite and added this big band arrangement to it. I mean, what would Tchaikovsky think of that? So
it was. Well, of course he did. He was doing it too.
Right. So it's that feeling. I think he would understand what the young artist does in creating their repertoire. And I think he would applaud it, hopefully,
Oh, I'm sure you're right. Mm-hmm. No, I'm really glad you brought that up because he did cut up and change a lot of pieces, and mm-hmm. so he undoubtedly wouldn't. He would only applaud what you've done with his music.
So.
I'm sure he would. In fact, he's probably out there listening to us right now. Oh man, I'm glad you did some of his music, and I'm glad you picked some of the less well-known things. Although, wouldn't it be a challenge to take an old war horse like the A-Train
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and do your thing with it?
I think it's almost, I think at a certain point it doesn't become a challenge anymore because you, as you hear pieces, everybody hears pieces in a different way. And just like when you hear Monk playing, when I heard him playing, The Man I Love or all these other great standards, I never equated them with Gershwin or whoever wrote them. I just thought they were Monk's pieces because of the way he played them.
Because of what he did with them, of course.
Yeah, or I'm getting sentimental over you. I was like, oh, that's a Monk piece. I was like, oh, well, not really.
But. Well, it was a Monk piece at the moment he did it. Boy, right. It sure was. Well, there's more coming up in a minute. I'm Marian McPartland, and my guest is Jason Moran. Piano Jazz is made possible in part by Borders Books and Music, celebrating the arts by supporting cultural programming on NPR. I guess I can't stop talking about Duke because, I mean, some of his pieces, they almost sound like free pieces that people do today, don't they?
Right, especially some of his piano intros that he would do before the band. I mean,
oh, he was so funny because he would say, and I've always remembered this, he would say that the piano player, he liked to call himself the piano player, sits down and he's got to play something that gets everybody's attention, and it's going to amaze everybody. And I always think about that because he sure did.
And then he had this thing that I see in videos is with his hand, how it flies high, how they fly high above the keys.
Oh, he was just doing that for show.
Yeah, but it's so accurate what he does. I mean, I can't raise my hand that far up without being inaccurate.
But then he did something else, which people always say to me, why do you play the pedal with your left foot? Mm. And it's because I used to watch Duke with the band, and he always kind of turned towards the audience, smiling, and putting his. And so, quite early on, I started doing that. I thought that showbiz, I can do that. But not like him, of course. Well, we could delve into some kind of talking about free pieces, we could maybe do something like
that. Right. That sounds good. I'm following you.
You're following me?
Following
Don't
you.
Follow me. I'm treacherous.
Thank you.
Boy, that was nice. I think that's a very creative thing to do. As long as you don't go on too long.
Right, right.
I thought that was some, just the right length.
Some bounds have to be put
within
on
bounds, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it's such a shame, you know, we're running out of time, and I hate to end now when there's so much more we have to play and talk about, but unfortunately, we have to do one last tune. And I was thinking maybe we should, since we talked a bit about Monk, maybe we should end with a Monk tune.
Sounds good.
Okay. Let's have a go at Straight No Chaser.
Sure. Thank you. I like those departures.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland. Our guest today has been Jason Moran. This program was originally broadcast in 2002. Join us each week at this time as Piano Jazz brings you conversation and improvisation with other outstanding artists. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Duke Marcos. Assistant recording engineer, Dan Hoppler. Mastering engineers, David Mitchell and Skip Beach. Production assistant, David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Contact us by email at pj@scetv.org. Or you can use regular postal mail. Our address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To find out more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a recent program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, from Borders Books and Music, and from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. Support also comes from Jazz Times Magazine, now celebrating its 40th anniversary of delivering jazz news, insight, and opinion, at newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.